to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
Thank you for a really thoughtful conversation. It's been one of the most thoughtful conversations I've had about the book overall. And so I really appreciate it.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy, everybody. Hey, today's sponsor, you know, everyone hates doing the books for their business, except Sally Doyle. At Absolute Business Solutions, she is a trustworthy bookkeeper who loves crunching the numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs. You can sleep soundly knowing every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You're freed up to do the work you're good at and keep leading. To set up a free consultation, call Sally Doyle, a profit strategist, bookkeeper, and innovative thinker at Absolute Business Solutions. You can also reach her at 651-208-8151, or you can connect at the bottom of the show notes. So, yes, today in the studio, we have Marshall Davis of Davis Sound. Hey, Marshall.
Hi.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah? You're faring the snow okay here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I've got the right clothes for it, so keeps me warm. That's the important thing. You got to have the right clothes.
Yeah, that's right. Marshall Davis is the owner of Davis Sound. It's a Hopkins, Minnesota-based audio production company specializing in audiobooks, corporate and commercial voiceover, and voice recording for music. For audiobook work, Davis Sound has extensive experience in recording, editing, and mastering audiobooks for digital publication through Audible.com and other similar web download sites. Marshall is a nationally known Audible-approved producer with more than 90 audiobook titles completed. That's amazing. 90 audiobooks?
Yeah, I think I'm starting book number 96 right now.
Wow. What's the topic?
I'm not sure yet. I just got the manuscript.
Okay.
It's an action thriller, but I don't know much beyond that. I'll have to dig into it probably starting tomorrow.
So do you read the books ahead of time?
Sometimes I do. I usually go through and look at characters and how long it is and what style it is. But the narrator, contracted narrator who's going to be reading it, he has the manuscript, he's going through it, he's pre-reading it. And so usually they do more of the pre-reading than what I do.
I see.
I look at the manuscript for a little bit different types of things, but the narrator has it, he's going through it, developing character voices, things like that. So it's already being worked on, even though nothing's being recorded yet.
Yeah, right. Excellent. Well, audiobooks can be recorded with the author narrating the book or recorded with a wide range of professional voice actors. So at Davis Sound, you work with clients from all parts of the country.
Right.
Yeah, and audiobooks, corporate, and music voice. What do you do with the music voice?
That really comes in a lot of different forms. I've done everything from pop music, rock, hip-hop, rap, pretty much everything. And probably the most interesting one was I was working with someone it was a vocal group in New York. The lead vocalist was from Israel. And the New York group sent me all the background music. The vocalist from Israel happened to be in Minnesota, so they called me and said, can you record him? And I said, sure. So he recorded his track. I sent it back to New York. They finished the mix. Everything got put together.
Oh.
So that's one example of how I can do
a collaboration.
Collaboration with people from around the country. Mostly people come into my studio and record. They bring their music. Occasionally, I'll work with people. In fact, I used to do a whole lot more of it, doing the actual music recording itself. But that has really gone away quite a bit. So now I'm focusing almost entirely on voice work.
Okay.
And the audiobook business has just been taking off. I do periodic presentations to book groups, to publishing groups, to organizations. So I have all the nice PowerPoint presentations. And I can say from statistics that the audiobook business, quoted by many different sources, is the fastest growing part of the publishing business. And it's been growing at a rate of about 30% a year for the last 5 years.
That's a lot.
And so has my business. Not necessarily that much, but...
You're tracking with it.
I'm tracking with it. My business just keeps growing every year, and it's almost all audiobook work.
Wow. And are you finding that the more you're doing it, the more you're loving it? Or it has each different dimension with each audiobook?
I would say that the more I do it, the more comfortable I am with everything that comes in, but also I get to hear a wide variety of books and topics and things that I might not ordinarily pick myself. And some of them have been really interesting.
Yeah.
So there is that part of it.
I see. That keeps just, you kind of curious
it's
and
like,
learning.
Oh, what's this book going to be about?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it also gives me an opportunity to work with a lot of really good people all over the country.
Nice.
And some of them I've never met. A lot of them I've never met. But I've worked with authors probably from maybe 16 different states, publishers from probably 3 different states. And I also work with contracted narrators from all over the country, too.
And then you work with different voice talents. So not... the reason I thought you would be wonderful on the show is, one, you've got a great voice. You also are doing a lot of this work. And I'm interviewing authors all the time. And most of them do not have audiobooks.
Okay.
And so I feel like I'm doing them a service.
By pointing them in the right direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And helping an author figure out, you know, when it makes sense to do an audiobook or when it doesn't. Are there some occasions when you have encouraged someone to not do an audiobook?
Yeah. What I generally tell people is that audiobooks, you're going to make more money per book or per sale, but because the market for print books and ebooks is still quite a bit larger than the market for audiobooks, even though audiobook business is growing year by year, it's still a smaller percentage. So the understanding is that you're probably not going to sell as many audiobooks as you do print and ebooks. So if you're an author who doesn't really put a lot of time and effort into marketing and you're selling maybe 20 or 30 books a year and your book is 10 hours long, probably doesn't make sense to do an audiobook.
Okay.
If you're really good at marketing, you're selling maybe 50 to 100 books a month, and this is really where you're putting your effort, and you really get out there and work the social media, you work the marketing, then definitely audiobooks are going to give you a different income stream.
Yeah.
An additional income stream, because even though there's some overlap between audiobooks and reading books, I'll call it, there's still a different market. And so you're going after different people. So even if you've sold your print book for 3 years, if you release an audiobook, now you're opening it up to another market.
So
I would say as long as you're willing to market it, as long as you're in a genre or have a book that sells well already, doing an audiobook is like a second income.
Sure. And what's the difference? I mean, when do you recommend the author reading the book and when do you hire a voice talent to read the book?
What I generally say is if it's a fiction story, there's almost no reason that an author should read the book themselves. A professional voice actor is going to do almost always a better job than the author. Where it makes sense to have an author read their own book is if they are telling their story. Sometimes it's a memoir, sometimes it's a business book, sometimes it's marketing strategy that this person came up with.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that. So if it's a person in whatever form it is, memoir, business, corporate, anything like that, if there's somebody that wants to get out there and tell their story, and they're not horrible at reading, then it generally makes sense to have the author narrate their own book. What I've encountered is that people who listen to audiobooks all the time tend to be a little bit more forgiving with an author narrating their own book because they know that they're not a professional voice actor.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So maybe it's kind of like, this is kind of a little weird to listen to it, but then they settle into it knowing that, you know, the person's telling their own story.
Yeah.
And, you know, perfect example was this woman wrote a book about her daughter and the daughter's life having and born with and having a condition called spina bifida.
Oh, yeah.
So really only she could tell the story because it is written in first person.
Oh, I see. Sure.
And having a voice actor might have been okay, but I think it gives a lot more emotion and feeling and drama to have the author being the one telling her story.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, I would support having an author, you know, read their own book.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it works much better, and they're going to end up with a better product if they have a professional narrator do it.
Okay. Well, I like the way you work with people and sort out different aspects of what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. And,
yeah.
You know, and they appreciate that a lot, too, that you take the time to kind of do it right. And it seems like your pricing has also worked well with authors in what their affordability is matches with kind of what you're charging. And it's not like, you know, it's a good match how you have set that up.
It seems to work. And I'm charging less than the big New York producers. But I'm also not, in fact, I had to turn somebody away because they wanted to do something on a shoestring budget, but they wanted two professional actors doing a 12-hour book. And it's like, no, I can't do that on a shoestring budget. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right, right. So you are good about setting the boundary to make sure that it makes sense for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's worthwhile because you've done enough projects so you know what's going to be a train wreck.
Yeah.
And where you won't, you know, make a profit because that's critical.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, this isn't your first venture. You've been kind of out in a different world. So you want to tell us a little bit about kind of like where you grew up and kind of what were some of your interests as a younger person?
Okay. I kind of started off as, well, I got my first musical instrument when I was six. Mm. It was kind of like a toy flute. Still the kind that you put off to the side and finger it like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a full concert flute, but it was a smaller version for kids.
Was it made out of wood?
No, it was metal.
It was? Yeah. Okay.
Not like a recorder.
It wasn't called a flute?
It was called a flute.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't a full-size concert flute.
Oh, I see.
But played that for a while, and then I got a guitar when I was eight, started building drums when I was 10, kind of, you know, clarinet and saxophone were in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Kind of dabbling around in different things. I ended up really settling on drums, but also in the back of my mind had this interest in guitar, even though I had never played guitar professionally until much later in life. And so by the time I was probably 15, I was playing in different bands and school bands and church bands and various things. And then I got sort of drafted into this country gospel group, and I was 15.
Oh.
We recorded an
album.
Where
was this at?
This is in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Is that where you were born?
No, I was born in Arizona.
Okay.
Sorry. I was born in Portland, but my family moved to Arizona right after I was born.
Okay.
So my first 7 years were in Arizona.
Okay.
which is funny because my oldest son was exactly the same way. He was born in Portland and 3 weeks later moved to Arizona.
Oh.
So, yeah. Like father, like son.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, my music kind of began in Portland.
Yeah. Were your parents musical or how did they introduce all of
music? My mother was.
You? Okay.
And
what did she play or sing?
She had a family piano. She wasn't really what I would call a musician. She liked music. She sang in the church choir. She had her couple of songs that she played really well on piano. But I wouldn't really call her a musician. But she always liked it. She encouraged me and encouraged my sister to play. My sister kind of played in band. She played flute, but, you know, the big concert flute.
Okay.
And then kind of stopped it after she got into high school.
And there's just two of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay.
But fortunately or unfortunately, depending on, you know, what parent you are, I kept it going and turned it into a profession.
Yeah.
And so, actually, I started my first recording studio experience when I was 15.
Wow. Sounds like your son.
And that was when I discovered studio magic.
Okay.
How people could, and this is even before digital editing.
Oh.
How people could take out stray sounds, how they could manipulate the tape, they could do various things to get things to sound really good.
Okay.
So that was my introduction to studio work. And I was just totally amazed at it. And then in my early 20s, by the time I was writing music, performing music, playing professionally, I started writing my own music, went into a studio, recorded my own music. And there again, that's when I got more into seeing how people are splicing tapes and how they record 8 tracks, bounce it down to 2, go back and record another 6 tracks, things like that. Again, this is all before digital editing or digital recording.
And were you with a band or was this on your own or?
A little of both.
Okay. And how did your music kind of change as you were getting older?
It was still very.
Like what type of music were you playing?
As a musician, I was playing a lot of jazz, a lot of rock, and probably a lot of folk. So the music I was creating was sort of in the folk rock blend, a little bit more rock influenced,
okay. But
also spent a lot of time playing jazz. And
guitar?
I was a drummer back then.
Okay. So you built the drums that you played on?
Well, the first drums I built weren't really worth playing on, but eventually I started buying, you know, good drums.
Okay.
And I had a couple of different sets.
Okay.
But yeah, I played jazz for a long time. And I was fortunate to have to go to a high school that had a very good jazz band and a very good jazz teacher.
Where was that at?
This is in Portland.
Okay.
So when he wasn't teaching, he was a jazz band leader.
Oh.
He played sax. But he understood jazz, he understood bands, he understood everything like that. This was kind of more big band jazz style.
Okay.
So I was a drummer in probably a 25-piece band.
And this was like in the 70s?
Yeah, 70s.
Okay.
So we were doing a lot of stuff like Buddy Rich and Stan Kenton and venturing even into some Frank Zappa stuff and things like that. But yeah, it was all 70s big band.
Okay. 70s big band. That reminds me of, what was on the TV? There was a big band. They would be on every week. Lawrence Welk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My mom used to watch Lawrence Welk, and I'd sit up and watch it. And always noticing the drummer in the background.
Yeah. Oh, very cool.
But I loved the piano.
Oh, you did?
When they'd bring out the upright piano, and they'd take the front panel off of it so you could see the strings and the soundboard.
Yeah,
and they'd
play
honky-tonk stuff.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. So when you left high school, you must have left that big, the larger band because that was kind of built into the.
Yeah. Leaving high school, I really got into rock,
okay.
Played in a rock band for a couple of years. toured up and down Oregon and Washington, and actually played into Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, no, that was with the jazz band. Never mind. Not the rock band. But yeah, the rock band, I was just kind of a little bit of touring up and down the state.
And how big of a band was it?
It was a four-piece.
Four-piece?
Yeah.
So you had the drums, the singer, the guitars, the...
Yeah, it was two guitars, bass and drums, two of the guys sang.
Okay. Oh, a nice bass sound.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Wow. And how did you like that kind of lifestyle? Was that in lieu of college, you went and kind of toured with this rock band?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, were your parents were okay with that?
Probably not.
You don't know for sure?
But they would much have preferred me to be doing something different, but I wasn't living at home, and they didn't really know a lot of what I did. But
okay.
But yeah, I played a lot of rock music.
Okay.
Also had, for part of the time, I had a day job building guitar amplifiers.
Oh.
With a company that was also based in the Portland area. And so that was kind of my life. I built guitar amplifiers and played in a band and did as many gigs as we could get.
Okay. Well, and you weren't traveling too far, so no. You could keep a day job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happened with that band?
That band went away, and then I went into another band, and then went into another band. And after a while, I kind of felt like, where's this going to go?
Yeah.
And
good question.
I looked around and didn't see anybody really over the age of 35 doing what I was doing. Hmm. And my mother, probably for reasons that I think she was hoping would go in the direction that it actually did go, he was a former jazz musician who was now in his 70s. And had some fantastic stories to tell, but he was also living on government subsidies, had no money, and really no family. And I kind of looked at that and thought, do I really want to end up this way?
Yeah.
And looked around at the fact that nobody really more than 10 to 15 years older than I was doing what I was doing. I thought, you know, maybe this doesn't really have a future. Mm-hmm. So I decided that, okay.
Was that a hard truth to come to? Or just kind of a natural progression?
More of a logical decision.
Okay.
Because I knew I didn't have to give up music. It was just doing it for a living that I was giving up.
I see.
And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll start taking some college courses and start finding something that would give me a satisfactory day job.
Yeah.
So that's another whole story, ending up where I did, but...
Where did you end up?
Well, I changed majors twice and ended up with a combined dual major of physics and computer science and ended up working in the semiconductor industry, which is the computer chip industry.
Yeah. Okay.
And my first major job in that field was Intel.
Before it was Intel?
Well, yes, it was Intel.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's been Intel right from the beginning, but I got in 1979.
Okay.
When I started Intel. And in fact, the drummer in the first rock band that I played in was the one that helped me get into Intel because he was already working there. So that led to something else, and which led to something else, and I eventually spent 30 years in high tech, moved into corporate management, and still played music during some of that time.
Is that when you were playing jazz?
No, I'd kind of given up jazz after I got out of high school.
Okay.
I still played a little bit, but not that much.
Okay.
But ended up in the 90s, getting back into rock bands and back into touring and back into writing original music and things like that.
Oh, what changed?
Kids grew up.
Yeah.
And life changed, and kids got a lot older, and I had a little more opportunity to do that.
Sure. Okay. So, and how many kids? So, were you married at this time?
From 81 to really 95, I was. And then we kind of went different directions.
Okay. Did you have any kids?
Yeah, two kids.
Two kids. Okay.
So she came to Minnesota for 2 years and then went back to Portland. And so the kids were kind of back and forth a little bit, and then she came back.
Because you stayed here
in
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay. So you both came together to Minnesota.
And then she left for a while and then came back and then eventually went back to Portland full time.
Okay.
And the kids stayed here.
I see. With you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when I really got into a lot of music.
Okay. Were you still at Intel?
No, no. The company I worked for out here was Seagate.
Oh, yeah. Have they? Yeah, they're still around. Yeah. They're a nice company, actually. They've got a good, they have a good vision and values.
Very good company to work for.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard that. Okay.
I've heard some very interesting stories about other corporations, but I would say Seagate treats their employees as assets rather than simply a cost.
Okay.
And they put a lot of effort into training. They put a lot of effort into making sure that you're contributing to the company, making sure you understand how you're contributing to the company. And as a manager in an organization like that, that was great because that's how I'd want to treat my group anyway.
Right.
So it
aligned, it was in tune with your core values.
Yeah. So without, you know, digressing into a different area, Seagate was a great company to work for.
Okay. Very good. And then you were raising your two kids, a boy and a girl? Or
two boys.
Two boys. Okay. And then I think we've got a few more minutes in this segment.
Okay.
You're raising your kids on your own then at this point?
After a certain age, yes. They were kind of with me.
Okay.
Full time.
They were how old at that time?
Well, they were getting out of high school by that point.
Okay.
So one of them stayed here quite a few years. Actually, both of them stayed here quite a few years after high school. And one of them went back to Portland, and one of them eventually moved to San Francisco. And now he's the drummer in four different bands.
Okay.
And, the same one that moved to Arizona 3 weeks after being born.
Okay.
So he's kind of following some footsteps there.
Yeah, that's right. There's a little bit of a theme there.
Yeah.
Okay. And your other son, what's he interested in?
He was interested in computer animation.
Oh, it's a good area to be in too. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue our journey. As we close out, I was just wondering if there were some on this conversation, and we'll go ahead with another one and go into some of the other aspects about audiobooks. We started our conversation there, and I was wondering if we could just kind of segue into what are some gems that you could give to someone, an author who's considering audiobooks. What are the biggest questions they should be asking themselves outside of, am I going to market my book?
That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Not am I, it's how am I.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're not going to, then you probably don't want to do an audiobook.
Okay.
Audiobooks, there is a cost. Sometimes the cost is up in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to market your book, then I would probably tell people don't bother spending the money on an audiobook.
Okay.
If you are a serious author and you want to market your book, you want to, you know, build up sales, you want to do all of that, then an audiobook is a great contribution.
Yeah. It's worth the investment.
It's worth the investment.
Because you can get the return on it.
Yeah. And there are some people, it may take 2 years of sales to pay off the production cost. But other authors I work with, there's one in particular I'm working with now, and he told me that his return on investment was 1 month.
Oh.
That he is a very good marketer.
Yeah.
And he sells a lot of books. He has very good books. He's in the right genres. And so doing an audiobook is a no-brainer.
Yeah, right. All right.
So well, he said he'll do an audiobook on everything that he writes.
Yeah, because he knows that it's a surefire
He knows he'll make
sale.
Money on it.
Yeah.
There's several authors that are in that situation. They make money on every audiobook that they do, and some of them have done 12, 15 books. But yeah, they make money on every one of them because they're out there marketing it. They know what people want, and they write successful stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really great. Great information. I'm glad that you're here. I appreciate kind of your journey to Minnesota and kind of how you've kind of carved out your niche. Because I think anyone who's venturing out into a band, I mean, these are the practical things to consider when you're trying to develop a career.
Yeah.
Is what is really going to work over the long term, and what can I do for fun now?
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, how can I follow my passion here and carve it out in a way that makes sense for me more long term, or even if it's short term, but just having thought through that through.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the audiobook business is a fabulous way to make a living by having a recording studio. But it's more than just recording, because there are dozens and dozens of recording studios that are probably just as capable of recording audiobooks as I am, but they don't understand the business.
Yeah. Right.
And one thing I do is I understand the business of who I'm recording.
Right.
And so that right there separates me from most all the recording studios in the Twin Cities for audiobook work.
Yeah.
For music work, most of them specialize in music. That's what they've been doing, and that's what they want to do. And in my case, I found the audiobook business to be a growing opportunity. It is something that I have both the technical and the business knowledge to be able to do. And by understanding the audiobook business, I can also help people with their first audiobook, or help people get into it, or understand how does the audiobook business work.
Yeah.
So I do a whole lot more than just record people.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why I call myself a producer rather than a recording engineer.
I see.
Because I do all aspects of it, and I help people with the business as well.
Yeah. And that's a really critical component.
It helps.
To have the combination of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps.
Okay. Terrific. Well, thank you so much for being here. We are having a We Mentor mini lab coming up on March 5th. It's from 3 to 8 p.m. And Brookview Community Center has just built a huge new building. I mean, they have yard bowling, and they've got a wonderful restaurants and nice meeting rooms. And so I'm teaming up with Julie Ann Siegel, and she is an interior designer that focuses on feng shui. And she helps people put together vision boards so that it reflects more of the energy that they want to create in the rooms that they would like to focus on, like their homes and in their home offices or other office space someplace else, and just in life in general, what you want to attract more. So vision boards are like this huge thing that people are doing now, because they're getting results, because they have a picture of what they want to create in the future in their life and bring close into their lives. So anyways, if you are interested in this, please join us for March 5th. I'll have some information in the show notes. And Marshall, you've got on your website some clips of music that
yes.
people can hear.
Yeah, if you go to Davissound, DavisSound.net, There are samples of audiobooks that I've recorded. There are samples of music vocals that I've recorded for other people. There's also a page that has some of my music that I wrote and performed and recorded myself.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a different, you know, selection.
Yeah. Well, it really gives an idea a little bit more about who you are and how you work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Monfrere, brother from another mother. We'll see everybody next week. All right. Thanks for tuning in.